Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments Podcast. Tune in to your leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Matt Hoffman, an editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, I sat down with Dr. Lee Charvet, a clinical neuropsychologist in the Division of MS at NYU Langone. She spoke to her work with digital therapeutics and telemedicine in MS and how these interventions might make an impact on the invisible symptoms of disease.
From NYU Langone Health in the Department of Neurology and the Division of MS. Well, even outside of the time of COVID, there's just been a very clear and tremendous need for tele-interventions for people living with MS. And that's due to all kinds of reasons. First, most people with MS or not have very busy lives, and it's really not feasible to come to clinic for repeated intervention, which is what we're talking about, is any kind of therapeutic intervention, rehabilitation or other type of therapy requires repeat visits. And that becomes a real obstacle, if you have a busy life or, for instance, there's barriers in transportation, especially if you're living with a disability, and there's costs too. We've actually did a survey of our patients and, we often think of tele-rehabilitation or telemedicine for more rural or remote communities. And we're right in Midtown Manhattan, where about half of our patients are probably within 5 miles of clinic. And even in that case, in our survey, we show that the average person is spending over an hour and a half in travel time alone to come to a clinic visit. And associated costs are subway or parking, it was at an average of $22 or so per visit, which again, that's just pretty staggering if you think about that for getting the necessary number of repeated treatment sessions to have a benefit from most interventions.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear that this has, obviously, like we said, this year being such a big year for, this move to telemedicine, to just hear the general costs, it's nice to see that it is kind of taking an uptick all over.
Right. And I think it's really comes down to access to intervention. We've really shown in our studies where we take treatment home to our participants that we reach a really much broader spectrum of people living with MS, which I think is really important, especially at the research level, to have everybody included as best we can. And we've been really overwhelmed by demand for at-home treatments. Most of our work has been in the research space, and so these are clinical trials. But even then, just the access to try a new therapy just underscores a tremendous demand out there for symptomatic management and rehabilitation and access to those types of treatments.
And now, so this is something you're doing, like you mentioned, just to help with symptomatic management of MS, to deal with things like fatigue and spasticity, I would imagine. Are there different models you guys are using, are developing, and are there any that stand out to you as particularly effective or have, the highest potential in this population?
So I'm a neuropsychologist, and so I really, my entry into this world was with cognitive remediation, which we know that we need a lot of training for, and that's probably one of the early therapies that has very well-designed and accessible computer-based or online-based training. So that was really our first entry into this, was to send people computers in their home and supervise them remotely to complete. Our first trial, actually, they did 60 sessions over 12 weeks. So you could just imagine, that wouldn't have been able to be done if they are coming to clinic. In general, with cognition, we also think of what a lot of times we call that invisible symptoms, is where that have such a burden on day-to-day living for so many people. So that definitely includes fatigue, things like pain, And emotional distress is another huge component for many of us, with or without any condition on board, but definitely is more prevalent with people living with MS for a variety of factors. And so our approach has been to evaluate computer-based or app-based interventions targeting these symptoms remotely. So, and we do that because we can reach many more people, as I mentioned, and provide the adequate number of treatment sessions. Our particular focus moved from that cognitive rehabilitation trial to evaluating the use of non-invasive brain stimulation, mm-hmm. and particularly something called transcranial direct current stimulation. And that's in the world of non-invasive brain stimulation therapies, TDCS as it's called, it can be portable and wearable. And so we knew that we could reach people in their homes. And so we developed a whole protocol where we do live video visits to help people self-administer with supervision TDCS or brain stimulation. The idea with TDCS is it may be therapeutic on its own. For instance, it's used for depression. It's actually approved in many countries for treatment of depression. But we're particularly interested in its ability to boost rehabilitative outcomes. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that pairing the stimulation while you're doing a training activity may boost that the benefit of the training activity. And so we took our cognitive remediation that we had established, and then we've added TDCS to that. And then that also brought us into the world of some motor rehabilitations. So there's, for instance, an established at-home hand exercise program to strengthen and recover hand function, where we're actually adding TDCS to that right now in a clinical trial. And we're also very interested in types of exercise, physical therapy and aerobic exercise at home paired with the brain stimulation or TDCS to see if we can boost the benefit of that training activity. So also, we're interested in its benefit for fatigue in general. So there's a lot of different ways, there's a lot of parameters on how to use it. And so in our research program, sending it home and with our just absolutely amazing patient participants who are true collaborators, we've designed a platform where we can reach people in their homes and have the high volume of sessions and sample sizes needed to really evaluate these emerging therapeutics. So that's kind of the broad overview of where we've been. And in that work, what we've really seen is that, you know, well beyond just a telemedicine visit, but people are really able to do what would seem on paper very complicated procedures in their homes with supervision. So we've learned how to take on the technical burden on our side and then guide people through what would seem very complicated, again, on paper, and be able to do these therapies very successfully in their homes.
And how easy, you know, in terms of that actual process of integrating these things into the care of patients, I would imagine, you know, there are some challenges that have presented themselves. I mean, it sounds like the patients take to it pretty quickly, but I'm curious, you know, how easily do you think, you know, if everything goes well and these continue to show, you know, positive trends and are proven, you know, successful for a number of things for these patients, how easily do you think that this process could be incorporated into sort of that regular care that patients get?
I think we're pretty close to that. I mean, so definitely the key element really, and again, it's a research question, but so a lot of these emerging therapeutics, and this is not specific to MS, especially app-based things or computer-based things, there's a disconnect between a provider telling a patient or therapist telling a patient, here's something that you can access that will help you, and them actually doing that. And I mean, we all know that. For instance, if I know I should go to the gym every day, but if I don't have a personal trainer or somebody watching me, I'm not going to do it. You know, it's hard to change the behavior. It's hard to incorporate that. I may have questions. And so because of the brain stimulation part, we are live with patients through video visits at every time. And so that's really helped to have that behavioral adoption of the daily treatments too. And I think that is really a critical ingredient there is the supervised, connected onboarding of these daily therapies to actually have them used. So, you know, again, there's all these wonderful tools, and many of them need more research, but targeting perhaps very meaningfully a lot of symptoms, but the uptake is not there yet. And I think that that connection is necessary. So necessary for the wider scale adoption and people truly benefiting from these therapies.
And now, you know, this is one of the things that I find very interesting about medicine is how over the past 5-6 years, things have really shifted toward the looking at these, you know, these apps and these, you know, and of course, you know, neurostimulation and neuromodulation have exploded in the past decade in terms of how often they're being used and just across the breadth of disease states. For you, have you experienced, you know, among your peers or colleagues, any sort of lasting misunderstandings about these approaches and how they might be applicable specifically in MS? I know, you know, a number of these have been developed, but is there still some pushback on the provider side toward widely adopting these things?
So I think there's two types of pushback. One is that awareness and raising awareness to your patient of this tool does not mean that they'll use it and benefit from it. So I think that that's a common experience for a provider is maybe they're aware of the tool, they refer their patient to a tool, and then they hear, I looked at it twice and I didn't do it. Or, you know, so there's that critical period of somebody, you know, that structured onboarding to use it, to have an adequate evaluation. And so I think that causes premature dismissal of some things that are actually of great therapeutic benefit. So that's one thing. And then the second pushback is just that, you know, people are, and again, because of COVID, with this telemedicine explosion, I think we've moved the dial on the acceptability of telehealth, you know, at a lightning rate, speed rate. But there's always been pushback of people can't do that. You know, like people aren't, you know, maybe, well, I, you know, I don't think my patient is computer savvy or tech savvy, or my patient has too much cognitive involvement or too many motor impairments to be able to do that. And if you take care in designing the intervention, those are all easily overcome. And that's really what we found in our journey with our program.
And now, you know, you mentioned sort of widespread adoption of these things and just getting these, you know, programs and the ability to use these sort of things out there. Do you think that is the trend that, you know, in a few years, once we have more of these validated, once, you know, the benefit has been shown in a number of studies, do you think that the uptick will kind of start to rise and that more and more, you know, MS centers across the country will adopt these at least partially for some patients?
Well, the short answer is absolutely. But I think what you raised is the critical piece as far as that in terms of validation. So what happens is you have really a glut of apps and online programs and symptom things. Some are very science-based, so they take what we know from in-person therapy and just make it into a digital therapeutic for access. And others are very different. And it's hard for the consumer, it's hard for the researcher to tell the difference sometimes between what is what. And so we need carefully controlled clinical trials to guide our use. And it needs to be established because nobody wants to tell anybody to use something, to put the time in to use something that hasn't been demonstrated to be worth their time to do. But with that type of evaluation, I see centers as having, you know, there's, you know, we have our, I don't think it would replace anything that we do now. So we have our provider care, you know, our nursing support, our social worker support, all kinds of supports, you know, all of our therapists, physical, occupational, all kinds of therapists that we work with. So that's already a comprehensive care on site. But this would supplement it because we know that so many people in between these visits still have significant burden of disease, primarily with these symptoms that don't have anything that can be easily or readily managed, any tools to readily manage these symptoms. And therefore, I think that the digital access, the access to these digital therapeutics might fill that need.
For patients, you know, obviously being involved with sort of assessing these therapeutic approaches and using, you know, rehabilitation through telemedicine, what have you, in your experience, have you seen in terms of what patients derive from and the benefit? I mean, is it Is it a thing that you've seen patients adapt to quickly? I know you mentioned earlier that, you know, you have seen positive signs in what you've looked at, but are patients taking to it? Is it something that you think, you know, that patients are deriving benefit from, that it could help address some of these invisible symptoms of MS, these things that we can't necessarily see taking place?
So, right. So our whole real mission is to evaluate these therapies so that we can confidently recommend them for use. And so you know, in the original cognitive rehabilitation trial that I mentioned, that was a positive trial. We found that people did that, you know, and it was a very carefully designed trial and that people had real measurable benefit from doing that. We've also found in several trials now that adding TDCS on board to therapies can boost that benefit and alleviate fatigue. And so we have ongoing work to continue to understand that. Dosing parameters is a big complication. So really refine, careful study to refine its use, but very powerful signals that these things can work. But the discrepancy with my clinical practice is, even though I know the research, I tell people all the time to do this or do that, and I'm just like any other provider, is that it's very hard, and you know the patients, it's an uphill battle for them to go home and adopt those things without the structure in place. So my vision really would be some kind of coaching or structured support, and that's what we have accessed or provided through with the telerehabilitation with the TDCS, because we're live with them at every session.
You mentioned earlier one of the big things about you know, doing these is the patients that you can include in these studies, and I know that's sort of been a conversation in MS specifically too with clinical trials. There are, you know, the inclusion criteria for these trials is not always, you know, right, the best, because so many, particularly when it comes to comorbidities and things like that, and these are so common with patients with MS. I'm curious, you know, these sort of telemedicine, telehealth, telerehabilitation based sort of virtual approaches, how do you think they might influence data collection in the study of the MS population? Because that, I know that that's a thing that's been a challenge for clinicians. Do you think that this could have a positive effect?
Absolutely. Well, a positive effect in that getting therapies evaluated for what we call pragmatic, practical use. And so it's very downstream. So for very good reasons, clinical trials have that rigorous enrollment eligibility criteria, because they're trying, you know, it's a different set of questions. We're at the total opposite end of the spectrum, is that we want to reach as many people living with MS as possible, just to have these tools evaluated. And then we can see, maybe there's a segment or something that wouldn't benefit from it, but let us find out by including everybody, you know. So we're much more in the inclusion end. And in that, we've been able to demonstrate that, you know, it's very important for evaluation of these types of therapies, any kind of tele or digital therapeutics, to include the broadest spectrum of people living with MS possible. And I think that that's just so important for so many reasons. And there's a segment of people living with MS who are really left out of a lot of clinical trials right now. And they're not able to even, you know, they face even more burden to get to a clinic visit to receive some type of therapy for a trial. And so we've just been really encouraged by being able to reach so many more people than are typically reached in a clinical trial to evaluate these therapies.
For the clinical community out there, for your peers and colleagues that are working in this space that may come across, you know, these therapeutics or your evaluations of them, you know, when data is published, what do you think they should be aware of, you know, as time kind of moves forward and these obviously start to come more toward the forefront of these conversations and the care of these patients? What's sort of the one thing that they should take away from this conversation or just be aware of about, you know, tele-based therapy and tele-based approaches?
I would really look to see, you know, and sometimes it's frustrating, but that it's not there, but to see that there's a carefully designed clinical trial that supports its use. And, you know, my hope is that that trial is done with people living with MS. I find that therapeutics, symptomatic therapeutics in MS are often what I think of as kind of trickle down. They're established in another condition or in another set of patients. And then, oh, therefore it must work in MS as well. I very strongly think that people living with MS should be at the forefront of these developments, particularly in this space. And so, you know, I would very much like to have a clinical trial supporting its use, particularly with that included and targeted something specific to MS. The second thing that I would think of is what I mentioned is that gap between even prescribing directly something and then its uptake. And so that people are often are going to need some support to onboard to actually have, you know, to benefit from it, even if it's easily accessed. If it's right there on their phone, there's still a disconnect from them doing that without some kind of support. And I don't think that's in any way specific to MS. That's how we all are. You just need that support and structure to actually use it. And so that can include provider follow-up as well, you know, for evaluation. Did you use it? Some of these platforms are wonderful in that they include a provider dashboard as well, so they can follow along with their patient and see their patient's ongoing ratings, for instance, of pain. There's a lot of work in that space for digital therapeutics where the provider and the patient can share a dashboard where pain is rated, and you know, they can evaluate, well, you know, this is a level of use. And so really as a partnership kind of tool in that way that doesn't burden the visit, but is useful for it. So those would be things that I would consider. But, you know, I'm very, especially with so many injuries into the space, I just think that it needs to be evidence-based for it to be used.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.